Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 274. I'm Brandon Schultz, member of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker. We're in the same room, my good buddy, Adam Emmert.
Yeah, I was going to say, you damn near missed the most important part of this, is like live and in person.
Yeah, this doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, that I'm joining you here. So, yeah, very fun, and under great circumstances, because I just handed off the baton of the Santa booth to some other poor, unsuspecting soul, and it's now out of my hair forever.
Celebrate good times. Come on.
Yeah, no more. It was hilarious because right before I came over here, the last thing that happened and what prompted me to leave after having trained said person up was a screaming kid came in, and I looked at her and I said, I'm not going to miss this for a second. Bye.
Well, it sounds like you got out of there with a win. The Seahawks, they get out of Philadelphia with the win. They move to 6-0 on the road and 9-2 overall on the season. Going up against the Minnesota Vikings on Monday night, we'll get there. But yes, 6-0, they match their 2013 road total. It feels good to have a team that it plays so strong on the road, at least strong enough to get the win in this case.
Yeah, I mean, so strong on the road. I mean, depends on which unit has decided to come to play.
Either one.
Yeah.
Whatever one helps us get the win on the road.
Well, I'm just saying if all the units want to play together, that'd be great. I'd enjoy that.
I feel like you're asking a lot here.
But
don't be picky.
I did say at the end of the last show that if they could come into Philadelphia and get the win and do it in a way that the defense actually performed at a high level, then I would look at this team as a team that can go anywhere and beat anybody and is a legit Super Bowl team. And they're here, man. I mean, the defense played really outstanding. Again, the weather, I think, had a large factor in that.
It's a little windy.
It was a little windy, and it was very wet. It wasn't Dallas Cowboys Patriots wet, right, but it was pretty dang close. And I think that really attributed to a lot of the offense, their struggles.
They had some struggles on offense, but you talk about the wind and it being a factor. It was not a factor on their first touchdown of the game.
In motion is Fant from left to right, the toss right side. Now Carson's going to throw back to Russ, who's looking to throw the ball deep. He's got a man downfield in the end zone. Turner is there. Does he make the catch? He does. Touchdown, Seahawks, from 33 yards out. A little razzle-dazzle by the Seahawks. Carson on the sweep right. Back to Russell Wilson, who throws deep, and Malik Turner over the shoulder in the back of the end zone, hangs on, and the Seahawks are on the board, and they lead the Eagles 6-3.
According to the advanced stats, it had a completion rate of under 15%, and I think I read that there's been only 7 of those in the NFL this year, and Russell has 3 of them.
Yeah, that sounds about right, because he does seem to make the impossible play at all times, and really, that was a fun play. I just want to know, who was the guy that almost died on the call there towards the end? when Turner catches it, was that Wyman?
It was Wyman.
That was very weird.
I think he was cheering. It was kind of a half-hearted cheer. Like, I know I'm not supposed to cheer,
right?
But I feel like he felt it in the moment. He just couldn't. Just don't suppress it.
Yeah. Either let it out or none at all. But none of this. that was kind of weird. But yeah, that was basically, that and the big penny run were the two biggest plays of the game. And at least you felt a little better with the Hawks getting on the board early with that touchdown. And then from that point on, boy, with the way the defense was playing, you just didn't fear Carson Wentz and company because the pass rush showed up again.
It did, and a big part of that was just the fact that Jadeveon Clowney wasn't even on the field in this game, mm-hmm. And so I know Seahawks fans were thinking or looking at that and going, oh my gosh, he was our pass rush, and now he's not going to be in there. And so for guys like Rasheem Green to show up, guys like Ziggy Ansah to actually show up, Shaquem Griffin shows up, mm-hmm. But it was Rasheem Green getting the first fumble, and I know you're going to enjoy this clip, Adam.
Sanders with the play fake. Wentz steps up in the pocket. Now he's going to go down. Ball is on the ground. Seahawks have it. Al Woods fell on it. Check it to see if there's any air left in it. As Wentz standing in the pocket, the ball gets slapped away. And there's Al Woods holding it up for all to see and listen to the Eagles fans.
Not just a Wyman chuckle, a Wyman guffaw.
A Wyman guffaw, no doubt about it. And, you know, it's kind of funny, the idea that that must have been very deflating for the Eagles, having that turnover happen right there. Much like that football apparently deflated when Al Woods fell on it.
Al Woods is a big dude.
Yeah. Check to see if there's any air left in that thing.
It was the only place Al Woods showed up in the stat line in this game. But, you know, he's always having that impact of being just that big guy in the middle.
Right.
But let's talk a little bit about Ziggy Ansah, the fact that he finally shows up in this game. He gets a sack and a half. He has four tackles. He has two QB hits. And he had a fumble recovery.
Yeah, you know how I feel about that? Neat. Because I'm going to need to see a lot more of Ziggy before I'm he's in, like, we're going to be fine. He's back and all that stuff. I mean, we're all very excited that the defensive line had a nice pass rush throughout the game.
Yeah.
But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves here. That offensive line is a dumpster fire right now for the Philadelphia Eagles. So it's difficult to get too up for that. The thing that does excite me is the idea that those are back-to-back weeks that happened, and the Niners don't have a dumpster fire of a line. We're going to need Clowney going down the stretch, and it's not looking super great on that aspect either.
With him having a core injury, now it's not one that apparently needs surgery as of yet from what we've heard.
Yeah,
but it seems like that's generally where those go.
Right. You know, one of those questions that's asked Clowney, you know, hey, are you going to need surgery? Well, not right now. That doesn't sound good.
No. Well, as Seahawks fans, we dealt with that back when Marshawn Lynch's last season, right? Where, you know, every week you're going, is he going to be back? No, it's going to be another week. And you get into the playoffs. Is he going to be back? No, he didn't even travel to Minnesota.
Right.
The thing that's promising to me, too, is that Rashim Green showed up. And there's a guy that, you know, you hope it's kind of similar to Frank Clark, and that didn't do a whole lot his first year, but now getting into his second year now, you know, and then the expectation with the third year that he can continue to grow. And the Seahawks have been good at developing their pass rushers.
Absolutely. And yes, Green coming through a little bit here does feel nice. But boy, does anything feel better than Keem, like, coming on here? What a whale of a game for him. He really has just, you know, they finally have found his role, and it's awesome to see him take full advantage.
Yeah, and having that kind of speed that he gets to the running back and the quarterback at the same time they're making the exchange, able to force a fumble and really come up with one of the big plays on defense.
Third and three, Wentz again from the shotgun. The ball is on the ground. Seahawks pick it up. It's Jefferson. He's still running. He's still running. He tosses the ball. The Seahawks have a chance to pick it up again. They do. It's Shaquem Griffin, and knocked out of bounds inside the five. We may have a forward lateral at the 30-yard line. But the Seahawks stripped the ball out after the quarterback Wentz and the running back Sanders ran into each other in the backfield. It was finally picked up by Quentin Jefferson. He was rumbling, stumbling, bumbling down the field. He tried tossing it back. It went on the ground. Finally picked up by Shaquem Griffin, who took it down to the five.
I saw you shaking your head at the idea of Quentin Jefferson lateraling the football.
Yeah, no more linemen running. I don't care if you're on a defensive line or an offensive line. No more. You're done. You're done. That's 2 weeks now where we can all agree that that's not your forte, and you're done with that.
I don't know. Pete Carroll made it sound like it was a thing that they might need to start practicing, because going back to his days with Bud Grant of the Vikings, he said that they would practice those lateral plays, and that if they don't practice it, they don't do it. Now he's thinking maybe we do need to practice these.
Negative. Negative. I'm not even talking about the lateral part. Like, it's just
the running.
Just the running. Just get down.
Yeah.
Just get down. And the other thing would be, like, Keem there gets a little fired up when he makes the play, kind of starts running towards the sideline. Everybody's like, dude,
it's not over.
Yeah. So a little better situational awareness there would be great. But really, his speed and his effort has really showed the last 2 weeks, and, you know, was able to get home a little better in this week, but also showing some counter moves.
Yeah.
And just exciting to see. And I love watching the brothers Griffin out there. And Shaq is just as, he's been even more dominant at his position this year.
Yeah, Shaquille Griffin, holy smokes, he's been having a heck of a year. He should be one of those. I don't think he'll be a guy in Pro Bowl consideration because it feels like those types of guys that are up and comers, they don't get their year until the year after they have a good year. You need to show it twice. Like Doug Baldwin had all those touchdowns the one year, still doesn't make the Pro Bowl, but he gets in the next year. So yeah. I kind of feel like that's what we're going to see with Shaquille. But a little bit more about Keem, man. It's interesting because he's not an overpowering type of pass rusher. That's a big difference between him and like Rasheem Green and Ziggy Ansah, who are just big dudes. But he has the speed and quickness to make these jump cuts, to make inside moves, and where the linemen just can't quite handle it. And if they can, then, you know, he gets bottled up. But if he's making 2-3 plays a game, that's more than what we've been seeing from some of these other guys.
Absolutely. And as a situational pass rusher, that's what you're looking for. Just be disruptive at times, and that's what he does well. You know, we mentioned his brother Shaquille playing corner, and how about the rest of the secondary? They're playing so great, man. And the difference of having Diggs and McDougal together is just, it's outstanding.
McDougal has a pick. Flowers gets a pick toward the end of the game to help seal the deal. And I do want to go back, though, to that play where Shaquem Griffin causes the fumble, because the offensive series after that, they get on the 30-yard line. All they do is go backwards. Mm-hmm. They end up 3rd and 25, and Russell Wilson throws an interception. It was the worst series after a big play that I think we've seen all season.
Yeah, that was tough. That was really tough to watch, but you had the sense the offense wasn't going to do diddly-poo for the most of the part, you know, throughout the day. And, you know, just with the turnovers as a whole, that was ugly for the offense.
It wasn't just the interception. It was as soon as they got the ball back, it was a false start by Hollister. Yeah. It was a delay of game penalty coming after the false start.
That was the one that had my hair on fire. Yeah.
Then they pick up, 5 yards, a little short pass to DK Metcalf, incomplete to Lockett, a little short pass to Hollister, but then they get Joey Hunt on a tripping penalty.
Yeah, that was a joke show of a call.
Because Joey Hunt was horizontal in the air and the guy ran through his leg.
Well, not really. Okay, so he certainly lifted his leg up in the air. He did. It wasn't egregious. And then not only that, it's never called. That's what I said at the time.
And then they called it all weekend.
And then they called it all weekend for whatever reason. Like, that was the crackdown on, you know, tripping, whether it's there or not. So, I mean, I guess I can't whine about it too much because I'm not a Cowboys fan.
Yeah.
But that was a tough series, man. And then, you know, Russell with the pick. It wasn't a terrible throw.
No, it was just maybe a little bit late.
Yeah.
And the defenders were right on top of it. And I think Moore maybe got a hand on it, but he was kind of out of position to make a good catch on it.
Right.
And the safety just made a good play.
Yeah. It wasn't Russ's day, man. Like that wasn't a great Russell Wilson day. I mean, including the wide open miss of Hollister in the end zone. Like, again, 99 times out of 100, like, he's not missing that.
And he airmails him.
Yeah. Like, dude.
Just walk it in.
Nope. So I
know there was a dude that was coming.
Yes.
You take the wide open guy versus potentially getting hit.
He would not have made it. He would not have made it if he had tried to run there.
Yeah. Okay.
Because everybody's like, well, he should have just ran it. Well, no, because he wouldn't have made it. So that he made the correct decision.
Well, yeah. Hollister was wide. He didn't have a guy within 10 yards of him.
Yeah.
He could have granny tossed it to him.
They might as well have. Yeah.
The wind would have had less impact.
Right. But,
I don't think the wind had any impact.
No, definitely not on that one. I mean, but it did throughout the day, and you could tell it was tough for both quarterbacks, and it really did hinder the offense. But, you know, Russell Wilson, definitely not the ire of most of the fans after that game. I think we all know who that falls on when it comes to the offense.
Well, we talk about one of the worst series of the game being the one that came after that turnover. But it's hard to get any worse of a series when Chris Carson goes with a 3-yard run, fumbles with his own lineman elbowing the ball as the ball's kind of slipping out of his hands anyway. He didn't have a good hold on it. And then the very next play, Russell Wilson apparently checks into a run play. Mm-hmm. Carson doesn't get the communication. He thinks it's a fake, and the ball ends up on the ground.
Yeah, he didn't know the play.
Yeah.
Let's talk running backs for a second, because they both did some bonehead crap throughout the the game. I mean, we're talking about especially the one where Carson didn't know the play.
Yeah.
You know, Russ checks it and he just, I don't know what happened.
Well,
there.
Pete said he didn't get the communication. I hope he didn't get the communication versus not knowing the play. I mean, they're both bad.
I don't know. It did not. That didn't look like a communication problem to me.
And the way Russ reacted, you mean?
Yes. Yes. And that's inexcusable play.
Yeah.
For a running back. Now, Penny had one himself, like, throughout the game.
On the blitz pickup.
On the blitz pickup, yeah. Where, like, you know, Russ is trying to tell him where to be, and, like, he can't figure out how to stand where Russ is pointing.
Right.
Like, he can't figure that out. And then once he does, like, the linebacker comes running right at him. He's like, okay, no.
No, it was the safety. It was Jenkins.
Okay, it was a safety, yeah. Whatever. And, like, he's like, I'm going to block. No. And then, like, runs around him to, like, be a safety valve. And then Russ gets blown up.
Right.
Like, that was a joke show. That is Bush League pass protection.
I think there were a lot of bad things happening in that particular situation. One is that Penny made the decision to go out as the safety valve as soon as Russell turned his vision toward the left side of the field.
Right.
And as soon as Jenkins saw his head turn and Penny, you know, go out for a route, he just went straight for the quarterback. Because if Russell would have been looking at Penny, then Jenkins would have just followed Penny.
Yeah, either that or Russ would have tried to, you know, lollipop it,
right.
Yeah, over top of him.
And there were probably a couple guys coming that would have tried to.
Yeah, it wasn't going nowhere.
But, you know, Penny had the speed, too. That could have turned into something better than at least it turned into. But, yeah, it was not the best look for Penny, and because he didn't even get a hand on the dude.
Yeah. So both backs had some boneheaded things, and only one of the backs had some production to make up for those boneheaded things, and that was Rashad Penny.
David Moore wide to the far side. The handoff straight up the middle. And Penny is off to the Razor's 20. 15, 10, 5. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. He was shot out of a gun. Rashad Penny from 58 yards out takes it to the house. And if you can't chip away, why not blow up the entire stone? And that's what Rashad Penny just did. The Seahawks lead 16-3.
Rashad Penny finishes the day with over 100 yards, 14 attempts, 129 yards, and the touchdown, which kind of sealed the deal for the Seahawks.
It did. I think everybody felt once he scored there that the game was over because, I mean, the Eagles could do diddly-poo all day. And one thing that I find interesting, like, let me ask you this, Brandon.
Okay.
That big run by Penny, mm-hmm. on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put the difficulty of that run or impressiveness of it?
Okay, well, he essentially goes untouched. The impressive part, I guess, is the execution of the blocking to give him the lane. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that he's able to turn on the speed. And the impressive part was at the end where the dude comes running at him and you're thinking, oh, okay, here's where he gets caught. And he just shakes the dude off of him with the...
Was it?
Yeah, the guy was it bounced off.
He had no awareness that dude was coming. No,
he leaned into it a little.
Maybe. I
saw his head turn.
Look, I don't want to, you know, take a crap on Penny's big day because, like,
so you're telling me that was like the easiest run imaginable.
Look, dude, I could have picked up 20 yards on that play and I can't run.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no like amazing running back skills there to just run in a straight line and then, you know, manage not to get tackled at the 3. Because the Bleacher Report, like, little moniker that came up on my screen, the little alert, right? Uh-huh. It's like, oh, Rashad Penny goes beast mode. And I was like, wait, did I miss a run?
Yeah.
Like, it went back and looked. No, I didn't miss a run. They were calling that one a beast mode type run.
Catfish!
And then the other half of his success on the day was a sweep to the outside. And that's where the Seahawks got the majority of their yards in the run game. It's almost as if somebody suggested that you run to the outside on this team.
And I don't know why they didn't do it more.
I didn't either. That was the one thing that might have been the most baffling. So Penny had his quote-unquote breakout game. And congratulations to our little flocker, Michael Paul in San Diego, you know, big Aztec fan, big Seahawks fan. Like, it's been his
catfish
dream to have Rashad Penny be a star for the Seahawks. He had a big day. It's not that impressive.
Got to be a wet blanket on the dude.
Here's the thing. Do I think he needs to be featured in the offense more at this point with Chris Carson and his Butterfingers problems? Yep.
Yeah.
I do. I still think Carson is the better runner. I guess that was one of those where, like, people talk about, like, Rashad Penny having this breakout game and it was a revelation of some kind. And I'm kind of like, yeah, I had two, like, nice, pretty simplistic plays.
Well, we got to get the guy hyped up for we're going to need at least one of these guys to fit in week to week.
Yeah. And I guess, and
we need some production.
Well, that's just because it just depends on the type of, you know, the flavor that you like of your running back, right? If you like your guy to be like bottled up, big play, like, then Penny's your dude.
Sure.
If you like your guy to go out there and smash people in the mouth,
get 3-4 yards
and consistently turn 3 yards into 6, 4 yards into 8.
Yeah.
Then Carson's your guy. And there's an obvious schism among the fan base as to who people prefer.
And I don't care as long as one of those guys has production on any given day.
Yeah.
Enough to get it done.
Exactly. But yeah, I definitely think, you know, Chris Carson with his fumbling issues, I mean, he needs to lose some playing time.
Just so he knows that he needs to get it together.
Right.
Because there is some repercussions.
Right.
For breaking Pete Carroll's, like, primary rule of it's all about the ball.
Yeah, it's the prime directive, dude.
Right.
Yeah, and he, you know, fumbles fingers, can't keep his, you know, keep the ball to himself. But the conditions do play a role there. I mean, and I think you saw that a lot with DK Metcalf throughout the game.
Yeah, he had a couple passes where I don't know if it was necessarily the conditions or just the... I just don't have that trust in him that he's just going to guide it into his hands the way that a lot of receivers that have that just good pass catching ability. And I don't know if it's something you can learn or if it's just something that we're just going to deal with this throughout his career. But he had a potential touchdown that he dropped. He had a couple big first down plays where one of them, it's a tough catch. Well, both of them, he had guys there, but still. Able to get two hands on the ball, you expect him to bring that down.
You do. But with that said, we have to understand his skill set too. Like, he's never going to be DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, AJ Green, you know, those sort of catchers, Doug Baldwin.
Yeah.
You know, just with, like, super sticky fingers. He's got good hands. He just doesn't have great hands.
Yeah.
And I think the answer lies a lot closer to, we're probably going to have to live with that throughout his career to a degree. But he brings enough other things to the table to where I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I could. And I guess I kind of look at him, you know, similar to when Pete brought in Mike Williams toward the end of his career, you know, that big body guy. He still had a little bit of speed. Hey, if you're a big dude and you can catch the football, you're Julio Jones, you're DeAndre Hopkins, D-Hop's not even all that big, but Terrell Owens,
right?
You're going to be
Calvin Johnson. Yeah.
You're going to be picked in the top 10.
That's exactly right.
You're never going to draft that guy.
Yeah. And look, you know, he's a big guy with speed. And
we got him at the end of round two.
And he has decent hands, not great hands. I'm okay with that.
Okay with that.
Yeah. But I heard a lot of people calling for a lot more Gordon.
Oh.
And it's like, well.
Well, where was he? He had the one third down conversion.
That's what we use him for.
Well, we had lots of other third downs. Where was he on those?
Only the important ones.
Okay.
That's the only time we bring him in.
Chris Carson led the team in receptions for the day with 4 receptions, 31 yards. And I guess maybe on a windy day, that's just where you go. But DK Metcalf with 3 and then Jacob Hollister with 2, which should have been 3 and a touchdown.
True fact. So after that game, I mean, geez, I didn't feel great about the offense and their performance. But knowing the defense has now put together back-to-back performances that are worthy of playoff victories, I have a lot of faith in Russell Wilson and the offense getting it figured out by the time that they need to.
While we're giving some love to the defense, let's talk about Michael Kendricks going to Philly, his former team, and racking up, 11 combined tackles on the day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, had a big day. I mean, he was very active. You could tell he was fired up to be playing against the Eagles there. And, you know, that's often the case when you get a guy who spent a long time with the team and he gets his first crack at him,
yeah.
You know?
And then we did mention Shaquille Griffin a little bit. He gets the strip, the fumble on Dallas Goedert toward the end of the game, too.
A lot of great plays by the defense. I mean, getting those turnovers, that's something that people say is not...
5 turnovers.
People say is not sustainable, but, I mean, it's something they practice. And you can tell. I feel like that's something that it's difficult to hang your hat on in the sense of we're going to get 3 to 5 turnovers a game. Not very possible. But the idea that you're going to be able to... you know, at least get an opportunity at one.
Yeah, well, and they're going for it. So it's, I mean, we see it on the other side of the football. They know that guys like Chris Carson are fumble prone. And so you start to see it, even when it's not Chris Carson, they're attacking the football because you just get that idea, that sense that that's what they've been practicing all week, mm-hmm. knowing that they're going up against a running back who's put it on the ground so many times.
That very true. You know what one of the most annoying parts of this game was? The fact that we couldn't just win by 2 scores.
Yeah, they had to give up the touchdown at the end.
Yeah, gross. That was super annoying. Because otherwise it played out like I said it would. I was feeling really cool about that.
Well, you know, they should have won the game by 3 or 4 scores,
yes,
the way things were going.
Absolutely.
I mean, you had the miss by Hollister. You had the miss by Wilson. Mm-hmm. The dropped touchdown, potential touchdown by DK Metcalf. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he went in the books with having 2 drops. I don't know which 2 that they're counting.
Right.
I'm thinking that end zone one is the one they weren't counting as a drop.
Really?
I don't know. I just think that that was such a deep pass. And it was kind of out in front of him and kind of low that it was a difficult catch.
Yeah, I feel like you could look at at least 3, if not 4 of his opportunities and be like, maybe.
Yeah.
That was a drop.
Yeah, he had 3 misses and two were drops.
Okay.
So I guess just pick which ones that.
Yeah, whichever ones you want.
Carson Wentz on the day, they hold him to 33 completions on 45 attempts. He had a rough day. A lot of short passes for Carson Wentz. I talking to Michael Kist on field mm-hmm. goals ahead of the game when he said that Carson Wentz is a vertical thrower in a horizontal offense right now. Mm-hmm. That completely played out in this game.
Yeah, it really did. You know what else played out is the fact that Carson Wentz can't hit the broadside of a barn right now. He missed a lot of throws.
Right. And short throws.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. I don't think he's the best short throw quarterback, but he doesn't have any receivers who can get open down the field right now.
That's fine, but you got to hit those. You got to hit those. There's no excuse. It's been interesting because these last 2 victories by the Seahawks, we just happened to play a quarterback that couldn't take advantage of easy throws.
Yeah.
And fortunately, this next week coming up, we get the same dude.
I feel like Cousins is doing better, though, this year.
Against whom?
Okay, so we're going to play that game. We're going to play the Vikings haven't played anybody yet game, right?
No, they've played some people, but this last stretch, right? It's been, 6 games?
Yeah.
Right? After the team nearly mutinied on Cousins?
After they were 2-2, after a loss to the Bears in week 4.
There we go.
A 16-6 loss to the Bears.
Right. Yeah. Who damn near lost to a 3rd-string quarterback yesterday on Turkey Day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they went down pretty quick. But that's a Daryl Bevel-led offense.
I know. And some guy, what was that quarterback's name?
Blau.
Had you ever heard of Blau?
No.
I hadn't either.
No.
I had no idea who that dude was ever. Like, he sounded like a Batman sound effect from, the original Batman.
Blau.
Yeah.
They almost lost. They should have lost to the Denver Broncos right before their bye week. Denver got up on top of them 20-0, mm-hmm. and they get a field goal coming out of the half, and then the Vikings just go off and score 27 straight. Well, not 27 straight. I think it was they got 7, and then the Broncos got 3, but it was 23-7 going into the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And the Vikings able to come back. And the Broncos nearly came back and won it at the end still. They had to make some great defensive plays at the end, which is what the Vikings had to do at the end of the Cowboys game to win that game, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not like they've been lights out in these last 6 games. And look, I mean, Captain Kirk has had himself a nice little run. And that's what he does. He has a nice little hot streak in the middle of the season when nothing
catfish
matters. And at that point, he goes and he plays in a real big game at some point and just craps a bed. That's what he does.
I know there's been kind of that narrative that he can't beat a good team.
It's not a narrative. A narrative makes it sound like there's some sort of opinion and story to the thing.
There is a story.
It's not like a story.
It's like, this is how the story has played out so far.
Yeah.
That's the narrative.
These are the facts, ma'am. I'm going to stick to just the facts.
Well, the fact is that since week four, he's been playing at top level as far as getting the passes down the field. Mm-hmm. Thielen hasn't been in there, but he's had Stephon Diggs. He's had Rudolph, his tight end, and those guys have been making plays. But the guy who's made the difference since week four is Dalvin Cook.
Oh, you mean a running back?
Yeah.
You mean running the ball is important?
I think it is.
It's turned out to be a theme this year, has it not?
A lot of the good teams have running backs
that matter. Yeah. Or just a run game that matters, right?
Yeah.
And yes, the Vikings are definitely one of those teams, but does that necessarily scare me as a Seahawks fan? No, mainly because I just went against the big, bad, number one ranked running offense in all the league.
49ers.
The 49ers. And they didn't do crap.
It's a little bit different, though. Trying to tackle Dalvin Cook is a little bit different.
Neat.
Although, I don't know if other teams just don't know how to tackle, and that's the problem. Trying to arm tackle Dalvin Cook does not work.
No, probably not. I mean, do you think he's going to come out in Alvin Kamara's?
That's my worry.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he's in that category of Alvin Kamara, Lamar Jackson, mm-hmm. and those are the two losses that the Seahawks have come to.
Is it going
to
be pouring buckets?
I don't think it is going to be pouring.
Okay.
I haven't checked the weather report, but I think we're okay.
Okay. Because that's why Kamara was untackleable when we were there.
You just think he was slippery because of the rain?
I was slippery because of the rain. Like, in the stands.
Yeah, well, true.
Yeah. So, I can't imagine what it's like trying to tackle a full-grown man in that.
Well, I think we're okay then. It looks like it's partly cloudy, scheduled for the weather on Monday.
Okay, there we go. Plus, it's a primetime game. This is something that we've talked about ad nauseum on the show over the years. I mean, the Seahawks are amazing in primetime.
Yeah, all the records. They're leading the pack as far as the NFL goes. Yep. I did look up to see what Mike Zimmer did the last five seasons coming out of the bye week. Mm-hmm. You don't hear about it because he is 2-3.
There you go. So,
not real impressive coming out of the bye.
You know what else is not real impressive? Wearing puke green jerseys with blue pants.
You don't like that? It's not all green. I thought you would be up for this. I thought this would be like a compromise for Adam.
This is not a compromise. The green is still there.
But it's not as strong. It's not the full pants and tops.
Okay. It's just, it's not a good look.
It's more of an accent look this way.
No, it's not.
It's more.
It looks like it's somebody who's very confused is what it looks like.
So are you worried then, or do we have to go back to 2009, the last time we had green tops, blue bottoms, and that loss to the Bears? Do we need to talk about
this? See, it reminds me too much of those unis.
Yeah.
Guess how many times that combination got worn?
One time.
That's exactly right. And I hope that's where this stops too.
And it was because Seneca Wallace took the L against mm-hmm. the Bears that day.
Yeah. And if we've learned anything over the last week, if you wear your ugly Color Rush uniforms, you get housed on Monday night.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, because that was against the Rams.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the one loss.
No,
that
no,
was the
I'm one talking time. Just last Monday night.
Oh.
There was an NFC West team that wore their Color Rush uniform.
Oh, yeah. And that was the Rams.
And they got housed.
By the Baltimore Ravens.
That was really, really, really fun to watch.
That was one of the blowouts that you sit and watch the whole thing.
I watched the whole thing and I cackled on the couch the whole time. But, you know, the girlfriend left for a while and then she came back into the house and it was, I don't know, 34-6 or whatever it was at that point, you know, and then she walks and she goes, oh, and looks at the screen and like Goff gets sacked again. I'm like, ah! And she just shakes her head and like walks off. I was like, I take so much joy watching those douche balloons like eat a whole bag of catfish.
See, what we needed to do is set up a little Emmert cam in your house and put that out as bonus content for the flock, because I think I would watch you sitting in your living room laughing at the Rams losing to the Ravens. I think I would watch that.
It was so great. It was so great. I loved it so much. They're done forever.
Yeah, they're done. Yeah.
Like forever. Because, like, I mean, Jared Goff, you know, he is who we thought he was.
Yeah.
And Todd Gurley's dead. And Brandon Cooks is, you know, another concussion away from being Wes Welker.
Yeah.
And
bring that one up. That one's kind of a downer to me.
It is a downer. I'm not rooting for him to have brain injury. Like, yeah, that's for sure. I'm just saying it's a true fact.
They're this close to being the Los Angeles Donalds.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the other thing is like, you know, it's interesting. Last year, all we heard from Ram fan was when Jared Goff had his like decline. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Cooper Kupp got injured, and so if we don't have Cooper Kupp, we can't do anything. Cooper Kupp is the guy that holds the whole thing together. Cooper Kupp, Cooper Kupp, Cooper Kupp. Guess who's back?
Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp. Not any better.
No, he is. Jared Goff is now.
This generation's Joe Flacco?
That's what you said before.
Yeah.
I kinda,
without the arm.
I kind of like to think of him as Jared Goffweiler.
Jared Goffweiler. That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. But, yeah, I mean, to Jared Goff's credit, he did have, like, one streak of, like, real success.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He got to a Super Bowl.
Right.
Well, so did Flacco.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's okay. Why he's this generation's
Joe Flacco. You had Osweiler get the team to the Super Bowl.
When
Manning, well, it was the defense. He was a spot starter. But.
And he didn't start the whole year.
No, it was the second half while Manning was hurt. But then, you know, he was in there long enough to get Manning to the games that mattered. And
sure,
he was able to allow the defense to win him a championship.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? My analogy fits better.
I like the name better.
Well, that I get. Goffo? You want to go with that?
No, that doesn't. Goffweiler sounds so much better.
He's just god awful. That's all I know.
Well, we're getting away from the Vikings.
I understand.
You held it in this long. I thought maybe you were going to start the show with it.
I thought about it, but I love their 6-5 record and the fact that they are completely irrelevant and people have all jumped ship on their frat boy coach. It's hilarious.
It is pretty funny.
Yeah. And it makes me think that the next team to suffer the same sort of deal could be the Baltimore Ravens.
I'm not ready to go there. We have a whole show to talk about the Rams next week. We play them in the game after this Monday night game against the Vikings.
I know, but they just got housed, Brandon.
I understand.
Yeah, and the Vikings. You're excited. And the Vikings don't interest me.
Well, the Vikings are interesting in the sense that they do have so many weapons on offense. Mm-hmm. You know, this team actually reminds me a lot about the Seahawks. Just mm-hmm. because they tend to be a slow starting team. Kirk Cousins is not Russell Wilson, but he makes the big plays down the field. At least he's looking for the big plays. And when you have Stephon Diggs, when you have Adam Thielen, that makes that possible. They have a run game. They like to go to their run game. So it's similar to me on offense. It's just they don't he doesn't have, you know, like those game winning drive stats that Russell Wilson has. Right. And then on defense, they're kind of similar too, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it that Mike Zimmer and Pete Carroll have a very similar philosophy in the way that they like to play football.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a secret.
So I know you didn't want it to come. I know you wanted to go outside of the norm of it coming down to a one score game at the end in Philly.
Right.
But this is going to come down to the end.
Yes. This is going to be a close game. It's always a close game with the Vikings. And they do have,
unless one team turns it over a crap ton or whatever.
Right. But they have a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball.
Absolutely.
And
Linval Joseph could be coming back for this game.
Oh, really?
They got the two big guys of the Everson Griffin.
Is Harrison Smith going to be back? Wasn't he out last week?
He's been limited in practice this week, so okay, he'll be there.
Yeah. But you got to think that whatever the Vikings have to throw at the Seahawks, like they're going to bring out all the stops.
Why are you worried about Harrison Smith? You've never been worried about Harrison Smith.
It's not true. I've always said he's a good player.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually admire his game a great deal.
Okay. I thought, just because he's not Earl Thomas.
Yeah. He's just not Earl Thomas, but he's very good.
Yeah.
I mean, he makes Eric Weddle look like a joke show. Like, he's an actually good safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had to eat some crow this last week too.
Yeah. Well, finally.
But Danielle Hunter on the opposite end of Everson Griffin.
He's kind of been the game wrecker this year.
He has been.
Yeah.
8.5 sacks on the year, but Griffin with 7. And Eric Kendricks, the linebacker, has been having a whale of a year so far. Mm-hmm. He was the guy to break up the pass at the end of the game against the Cowboys.
It feels like we're playing the same team for the third week in a row, like in a lot of ways, where their defense is, you know, the straw that stirs the drink for them. They have both, all three of these last teams are, you know, including the Vikings, okay, all have very strong defensive lines.
Yeah.
They're run-centric.
Yeah.
Yep, run-centric. And they all have a quarterback who can make wild plays in meaningless games and then crap the bed when the lights are on.
With that said, though, this team has the best wide receivers.
Yes,
out of the last
three. They have the most offensive weapons out of these three.
Yeah.
But that's probably the worst quarterback of them.
What?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Cousins is a joke, dude.
I would put him at number two behind. I would rather have Carson Wentz as my quarterback.
You would take Kirk Cousins over Jimmy G?
Yeah. I mean, not in a handsome competition, but
in any competition.
What has Jimmy G done that's so impressive in big games?
Well, I don't know. I watched him stare down the Packers last week. Okay. Freaking Cousins can't beat the Packers to save his life.
Well, he'll have another chance to do it.
Yeah, and fail yet again.
Okay.
I mean, the one thing that gives me hope in this game is that this is a big game for the Vikings. I mean, just in the way that the wild card is working itself out. And it's a huge game for us. I mean, you beat the Vikings this week, and that really gives you a huge cushion going down the stretch to be sure you're going to be at least the 5 seed and get to play the worst team in the playoffs in the Dallas Cowboys.
Dallas Cowboys or Eagles.
Yeah, I guess that's in play.
Either one, it turns out. Because with Dallas losing to Buffalo, now they're 6-6.
Yeah.
The Eagles are 5-6.
Yeah.
The Eagles, they're going to have a chance to get the win now on Sunday and be tied with the Cowboys. And they're playing the Dolphins.
Could be a loss.
The Eagles going to, that would be just demoralizing for Eagles fans. But the Eagles down the stretch, apart from the Cowboys, they play 2-win teams. They play the Skins, they play the Giants twice, and they play the Dolphins, all 2-win teams, and then they play the Cowboys.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's probably closer for them, the NFC East crown.
Yeah. With the loss to Buffalo, they're right in it now. Yeah. All they have to do is beat the Cowboys closing out the year, and they're playing in Philly.
Wow. That will be the Jason Garrett firing game, right?
I'm actually a little shocked that it didn't happen today.
Yeah, me too.
Because today it could have been the chance to make the move.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the last 3 years could have been the chance to make the move.
Right. But the idea that Jerry Jones is so fired up about the roster that he has, that now he's seeing that the fact that he's given Jason Garrett all the pieces now, and it's still not happening.
And I mean, is anybody shocked?
I mean, if you're not named Jerry Jones, you're not shocked.
I'm just ready for the Chris Richard era in Dallas.
And that's why I think it would have made a ton of sense to make the move now and give Richard the interim duties.
Yeah.
Because he's not even the full-time defensive coordinator.
Oh, right. He's only the pass game coordinator,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So you move him up to the top. And everybody else just stays in their positions.
Wow.
Yeah. And you see what he can do and how that motivates the team going forward.
There you go. Maybe that's a thing.
I mean, what are they going to do worse?
Maybe. I guess.
And then what do you lose? You just find another coach in the offseason like you're going to anyway.
Right. Right. And then overpay for Dak.
I thought that they had turned over a new leaf with this new offensive coordinator this year.
That was the big story, right? When they were beating up on all the lowlives in the league.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Dolphins and the Redskins and that sort of thing.
Yeah. After 3 weeks of the season, it was the Cowboys and the Rams were going to be playing to see who would go to the Super Bowl.
That's right. Yeah. And we were terrible.
Uh-huh.
It's hilarious. Like, these last 3 years, right, where everybody's been like, oh, they stink. And we missed the playoffs by one game. And then the next year, well, they'll be even worse this year. And then we go to the playoffs. And then this year coming in, everybody's like, they're going to be a dumpster fire. And we might lose the division and have 12 wins. Like, that's in play.
That could happen.
Yeah.
Probably the fifth seed is going to be 12-4, no matter who it is.
It takes 13 wins to win this division, you think? Because that's kind of where it feels like to me.
gosh, it's almost feeling like 14 at this point.
Yeah, because nobody can come out. Like, it's been, the Rams loss was really fun to watch, but the rest of the league can't do us a freaking favor.
We have
at
the,
all.
We have the Ravens to do us a favor. At least I feel like we have the Ravens and then the Saints in back-to-back games taking on the 49ers. If one of those teams, they have to get it done, if not both.
Right. My only concern is that the Ravens had such a spectacular game against the Rams that you could be in store for that letdown, you know?
Would you take the opposite?
Take what opposite?
Well, I'm just saying if they played the Rams close and then were able to beat the 49ers.
Yes.
I know that that would, I know that that's...
No, like, that throttle the Niners.
Or would you rather have them just throttle the Rams and then get whatever outcome you get against the 49ers? Because I kind of like the throttling of the Rams that much.
Yeah, okay, I did enjoy that a lot. So, but as long as it still results in a win against the Niners.
Okay.
Yeah.
In my head, I know that that's the smart decision that I want, and I do want that to happen.
Right. Well, I think it probably will, to be honest. I mean, every defense that has seen Lamar once has struggled.
Yeah.
We'll get to my do better. I'll touch a little more on this.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's going to be the game to watch this weekend. It's the first game on Sunday. Yeah. And so we get that as the first game, and then we get Rams Cardinals in the afternoon.
I mean, that feels like a Cards win at this point, doesn't it?
I didn't pick a Cards win.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of rooting for one.
Yeah, I think it happens.
It wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, I think they're legit broken.
Because they played them close last time, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. What the hell happened to the Packers against the Niners? What was that?
That was bad.
That was a joke, man. Like, everybody was riding high on these, these Packers.
The refs got on board with the idea that the Niners had to win early. Maybe. There were a lot of weird calls early on in that game.
Yeah, but Aaron Rodgers was a joke. Their offensive line was a joke.
Rodgers didn't have a lot of weapons.
Whatever. I don't want to hear it. Russell Wilson has never had, like, top tier, you know, like, perceived top tier weapons on offense.
Okay.
Well, and he goes out there and he freaking wins.
Yeah, Tyler Lockett's better than Devontae Adams.
Agreed. I'm telling you about the perception.
Okay.
Yeah, people are like, oh, you know. Well, Rodgers now doesn't have any weapons.
Well, speaking of perception,
yeah.
With Dalvin Cook, how much different in size do you suppose Dalvin Cook is from Rashad Penny?
I bet you he's 15 pounds lighter, about the same height.
Yeah, yeah, he's 5'10",
yeah.
And I think 210 pounds.
So about 15 pounds lighter?
Yeah, if you say Rashad Penny's 5'11 and 225, 230.
Yeah, well, you know, just... Two doesn't care.
Rashad Penny's the bigger running back.
Yeah. Yeah, because he doesn't care. Like, did you hear that part after Penny, like when Penny was talking in his press conference about how, well, I didn't take the offseason seriously enough.
Oh.
Then I stopped eating McDonald's. Are you serious? This guy has knucklehead factor written all over him.
I want him to be Dalvin Cook. He has all of the abilities, like as far as speed and size.
Speed. Size. He doesn't run with the same power and he doesn't have the same wiggle.
I don't know why he can't.
Because he's a soft runner, man. That's just.
Stop being soft.
Yeah, well, I know.
I know you piled on Penny earlier. I didn't want to necessarily bring it back up, but it just got me thinking.
Yeah.
When I looked at Dalvin Cook, I thought, and just watching him ahead of this game, I'm like, holy smokes, that guy runs with power and speed and it just runs through arm tackles. And that was the thing about Penny coming out of San Diego State is that he ran through those arm tackles.
Okay. I broke down Penny the draft. And I'll tell you straight up again, after watching the film, that his yards after contact stat was skewed massively, not because of arm tackles, but because of finger tackles that he was breaking. Like, literally a dude would, like, tap his shin with his hand. That's a broken tackle, and now you got all this yards after contact.
Yeah, we saw that. I didn't go into all his tape. I assume there are arm tackles in there, too. But
right, but yes, it was... He's not a violent runner. He's just not. He's a home run hitter, and that's all he is. And it's really cool when he hits home runs, like he did against Philadelphia, and I'm thankful he did that.
Well, we had one other listener get excited about the game against the Rams on the weekend, or this past weekend with Lamar Jackson. He writes and says, Brandon, I got to be honest, during the last show when you talked about being okay with Lamar Jackson taking over the MVP race, just as long as he does well the next 2 weeks against the Rams and Niners. I was conflicted. I love my boy Russ, but as I'm watching the Monday night game right now and incidentally watching the Rams get absolutely demolished, I am now totally on board with you. Good call. Hoping they drop a 50 burger on them tonight.
Yes. Yeah, no, you really did. You're spot on with that, man.
I'm good. I'm glad. You thought you were going to get spot on with the two scores thing. You totally whiffed.
Totally whiffed. Okay.
I mean, unless you count a touchdown and a 2-point conversion as two scores, which I guess I'll give you that.
No. Like, I won't take it. It was still a 1-score game when it was all said and done. It had no business being that at the end. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that does it for the first half of the show. Let's get to the second half. Let's welcome some new members of the flock and give you a do better and better at life. Getting into the second half of the show. Had an interesting email question come in over this last week, and he says, who do you think would win in a head-to-head match on a neutral field, the 2005 Seahawks or the 2013 Seahawks? I know this sounds like an obvious answer, but I think the 2005 Seahawks are a pretty underrated team, mostly due to the fact that they lost the Super Bowl against the Steelers, which they should have won if it weren't for the Zebras. Mm-hmm. It also isn't based off of which team is better, but how they match up. He says, go Hawks. Really enjoy the podcast. It's the best Seahawks podcast out there, in my opinion. Keep up the great work.
Well, thanks, man. That is an interesting question. I think if I just try to, think of it quickly and not really pull up the 05 roster and the 13 roster, which I know better in this moment because it's more recent.
Well, I can tell you with the 05 roster, you had like the Hall of Fame left side of the offensive line.
Yeah, I'm all good on the offensive side. Okay. What I'm wondering about is defensive personnel. I mean, Trufant and company.
Well, big play Babs on the back end.
Okay.
You had Lofa Tatupu in the middle.
Yeah.
For the linebacker.
That's true.
Up front, I think, was Colin Cole playing in that 2005 season?
Feels right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
As far as the defensive line, I feel like that's where the matchup is a little bit tough for the defensive side of the ball against the Seahawks offense, because that 2013 offensive line was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in terms of matchup...
Does it not feel like the 2005 Seahawks were the 2013 Broncos?
They were kind of in that they were, the best offense mm-hmm. of the league that year.
And a decent defense.
But they were different in the Broncos in the sense that they had Sean Alexander and they had that left side of the line.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the star running back of the 2013 Broncos squad?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, because it was all predicated on the pass.
Yeah.
The running game was definitely stronger with Alexander and, Jones and Hutchinson and all those guys.
But you kind of feel like that Pete Carroll's defense would have taken that away, like focused on stopping Sean Alexander.
Right. Who are the wideouts on that team? Was Corn Robinson one?
Daryl Jackson.
And Daryl Jackson.
Jeremy Stevens.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the LOB would wipe them off the field like they did the Broncos receiving core.
Yeah.
And then you could play up tight in the box and shut down a softish runner like Sean Alexander.
I think it's closer though. I think they,
it's not a blowout. It's not a blowout. Like they play.
I think Holmgren plays that game closer than the Broncos.
Yeah. Game. Yeah. I think, yeah. In true Seahawks, Pete Carroll era Seahawks fashion, I believe the 2013 Hawks win by 3.
They don't blow out the 2005 Seahawks like they did the Broncos.
No.
I think that's fair. I think they still win by a significant margin, but yeah, it's not 43-8.
Yeah, and not only that, but I mean, comparing him to the 2013 Broncos probably isn't the most fair because the 05 Seahawks were a Super Bowl winning team. They just had to play two teams.
Right. Yeah, the Zebras and the Steelers.
Yeah, that rightfully was a win for them.
The fact that the 6-seed Steelers, that still bums me out that we didn't get the Super Bowl win that year.
What makes it so much more infuriating to me is the idea that the referee came back to Seahawks training camp like years later and was like, oop, my bad.
We screwed that up.
That was a joke.
Daryl Jackson, even with the rules now, doesn't get called for pass interference.
No.
Even if they go back and review it, they probably overturn it.
That's those sort of plays those are the reason the NFL put the new rule in on reviewing PI. They're only going to do it in the biggest moments on egregious calls.
I bet they still don't overturn that if the ref on the field calls that now. The way they're doing it.
Oh, yeah. Because, again, they're saving it for
the big moments.
Right. But during the regular season, they've sent the message to the coaches, we are not screwing around with this crap.
Yeah, don't waste our time during the regular season.
Right. This is here so you don't get, you know, screwed in the postseason, and that's that,
okay.
Right?
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
I also like it when we get some new members of the flock.
Oh, sweet. All right.
Yeah, we got a one-time donation coming in through Zelle, $50.12 from Steve in Langley, Washington.
Oh, wow. Is that our first ever Zelle donation?
It's our first Zelle donation.
Wow. Okay.
No, he said
he broke our Zelle cherry.
He emailed in. He said, you know, I like to use Zelle or, you know, send paper checks. Which do you prefer?
You said I'm allergic to paper.
That's true. I did say that.
And you still write checks? Was that your next question?
No. Well, you know how you can set it up through your bank to like send checks for you?
Yeah. No, I do that.
Yes. Isn't that great?
Yeah, it is great.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you.
You don't have to pay a stamp.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing.
Yeah. And you don't have to remember.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part. Like, but you know, if I ran for president, the second plank in my, you know, political platform, what very important would be, I would outlaw the writing of checks in any sort of
like
line.
Like in the line.
In any line.
Yeah.
If you're doing that, you are automatically, it's a lot like The Good Place and The Bad Place, you know, in the TV show.
Right.
Yeah, that's automatic bad place.
They should have the technology by now to where you just hand over the check to the cashier and they run the numbers through it and take it out of your bank account.
That's what they do.
No, people write out a check.
They still write it out, but then they put it in the scanner thingy, and it scans it up, and then it scans it back, and it scans it up.
Well, put a little printer in there.
Well, yeah. There are places that do that.
Okay.
Well, yeah. But either way.
Sign the check, hand it over.
Just use your damn card. Or pay cash like a real person.
Okay.
Yeah. Freaking checks in line. But see, he went with Zelle, which made a lot more sense.
One person who I know does not write checks in the checkout line, Cynthia Thompson, who's into the flock with $5 a month.
Yeah, clearly Cynthia is above that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I have no doubt.
And she has great taste. She says, awesome podcast, you handsome hunks. Thank you so much.
No, she's a liar.
I said we're
solid sixes at best.
I know. Well, yeah. We'll take all the flattery that we'll hand out though.
Yeah, yeah. I just didn't want to build up expectations for, you know, the listeners.
I said that kind of talk. That's what gets you into the Ring of Honor without having to pay the full 12.
That's exactly right.
Thank you so much for bringing our amazing Hawks info to all the 12s in Arizona. I live in sunny Tempe, and there are 10 Seahawks bars around me where seas of blue and green cheer on our Hawks every single game. Yes, even the morning games. Hawks fan base is strong in Arizona and hard as your Richard Dick Johnson from the last podcast.
Yeah, I think I know what got her. Yeah.
Also, I joined because I laughed so hard. There were more of us Hawks fans at the Cards Hawks game in Arizona September 29th. They were way louder in their stadium. It was a blast. Keep the podcast coming. Cynthia 12 Thompson in Arizona. P.S. Adam, that eagle in the road was eating roadkill. Today, we ate eagle for dinner.
Yeah, that actually worked out for the better at the end of the thing. I was worried, but congratulations to Cynthia for bringing the noise down in Tempe. And I love the idea that there's 10. I didn't realize
10 Seahawks bars in that area.
Yeah, yeah. It proves my point that there really aren't any Arizona Cardinal fans.
They need to put them all nearby, and then you could have like a Seahawks bar crawl in Arizona.
Yeah, or you could rent one of those like...
Oh, the party bus.
The bikes, or a party bus. You know, like the beer bikes, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, all 10 people are supposed to pedal.
They're supposed to pedal.
But then it turns out like it did for me and Jared in Portland, where it was just us and all the other hipsters just got drunk and like, yeah, didn't do crap.
And you guys were doing the pedaling?
Yes, it was annoying.
Well, just say screw it. If nobody else is going to pedal, then why should you?
Yeah, we tried to make that point a couple times and we just sat in the street. Nobody cared.
They just were fine with sitting in the street drinking.
They're hammered. Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah.
Okay. Jesse Aney back in says 2015. because he's doing his year-by-year donation with the $36.
Yes.
That he says, this team has the feel that they don't want to give in or give up. Feels a lot like the 2013 team, even if they don't play up to the standard of the past. At the start of the season, I said we would go 12-2, and I was laughed at.
By whom, I wonder?
I don't know.
I would have laughed at him, but I've been like,
that's a little unrealistic.
Yeah, I think I said 11 wins.
I think you said 10. I think I said 11.
Oh, okay. That might be true.
Yeah. We can look it up.
Maybe I said 10 and that wins the division.
Oh, yep. I think so.
Yeah. Which might still be true.
I don't know if the 49ers are going to lose out, but it'd be fun to watch.
Yeah, it would be really fun to watch.
Yeah, I was looking at point differential and the Seahawks. I'm kind of curious to know, and I don't know how you would even go to analyze this, but has there been a better team that has won with such a narrow point differential against other teams? Because so many games have been squeakers. And
are you speaking specifically this year or over the last?
Just over the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah. So as far as just over the course of 1 year, I'm sure there's a bunch of other teams that have similar records, but the idea of having done it over this entire era of Pete Carroll football, I think that is special. I bet you if you stat nerded out on that one, that they would have to be in the top three teams of all time.
Well, here's the thing is that, you know, it's one thing for the players to believe when Russell Wilson's coming in and is going to win the game. Because I know we're all nervous, but the players don't act like they're nervous.
No.
And it's kind of starting to rub off on me, too.
Is it?
It is. Because I'm finding myself having more belief in this team that it's just going to work out in the end because it always seems to.
Yeah. It depends on the opponent for me.
So if it comes down to the game-winning drive against the Vikings?
I'll feel real comfortable on that one. That's where it rubs
the Vikings
off.
Defense?
But when we were playing the Niners in Santa Clara, that was pins and needles biting my nails. Yeah.
Lawrence Wallach in with a $36 donation as well. This is a good week for the one-time donations.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it, Lawrence.
Says it's hard to be a Hawks fan in New England. This podcast is a lifeline. Thanks from a 12 in exile. It's worth a few beans.
Hey, look, you can't argue with that logic, and Hong Kong Hawk would agree.
Yeah.
Having has spent so much time in the Boston area.
And then moved away, like as far as possible. I'd rather live in communist China than live with the New Englanders. Than live
with Pats fans. Can't do it.
It's fine.
Can't do it anymore. Yeah.
Dave's choice.
Yeah, it's I'm not saying that I don't like his choice. I
think he feels good about his choice.
It feels extreme. That's all I'm getting at.
All right, Adam. Well, thanks.
Is it a little ironic that now he's an expat?
You know, I wonder how many former Patriots fans live overseas,
right?
Or former Patriots players?
Yeah. Now, that would make the most sense, right?
Yeah.
And here is expat.
And their name's Pat.
Yeah. I can't think of one Pat former Patriot.
Did you know the Patriots mascot name is Pat?
I knew that.
Okay.
But Pat can't be an expat.
No. He's lifelong Pat.
Right. Because Pat Patriot can't be an expat.
What if Patrick Mahomes finishes his career with the Patriots?
I'm already throwing up my mouth just hearing that part. No.
Bill Belichick goes on to coach until he's 85.
That sounds more plausible.
Wins 10 more chips with Patrick Mahomes. And then Pat Mahomes retires to Russia and becomes an expat in Russia named Pat.
Now a commie expat. Yeah. There you go.
Just trying to work it out.
Who do you think is going to be the next Patriot quarterback next year?
Joe Flacco.
No way. No chance in hell. No chance in hell.
He's not going to be on the Broncos.
Flacco?
Yeah.
He ain't going to be in the league next year.
That's true. Well, he might be backing somebody up.
I could see Mariota being there.
Rosen?
I could see Cam being there.
Yeah. Because this is Brady's last year.
I think it is. The Pats.
Yeah. Well, he's done.
Yeah.
You've seen him try to throw the deep ball, right?
Yeah, he's not.
It's like
he's not Manning Noodle Arm yet, but
it's like watching Pete Carroll try and throw his age.
Yeah,
he has to get the full wind up.
Yeah, I don't think Brady's done playing football this year.
Really?
But with his contract being up and him selling his house and all that crap, like I do feel like this is the last year of Brady as a Pat, because I think Belichick wants to take this defense, run it back again another year with a little better quarterback play.
Yeah.
And, you know, really just throttle the hell out of the league.
So the Broncos signed Tom Brady for one more year.
Yeah, that was one. And the other was the Chargers. A lot of buzz for that.
Oh.
As you move into your new stadium, you're competing with the Rams. You know, Tom Patriot can go be down there for a little
while. Or he retires, Jimmy G gets hurt again at the beginning of next season, and he plays his last year with San Fran.
Oh, that feels fitting.
We can close out his career, hometown.
And the offense is already built around a guy with, you know, Tom Patriot sort of game, you know, because that's who Jimmy G is.
Yeah.
I mean, only not nearly as clutch and scared in the pocket, but.
And way more injury prone.
Yeah. The reason why I would go with the Brady's done at the end of this year is he is totally done being hit.
Yeah.
He's in full fetal position mode now, like that last Montana year, that last Manning year.
When somebody's
year.
Coming at him, he's like, okay,
Yep.
I give up. Well, a big thanks to all of our new members of the flock. Thanks for coming in with the donations. If you want to become a member of the flock, you can go to getintheflock.com or you can go to SeahawkersPodcast.com/support and support the show there.
Really appreciate it, guys. And I actually feel like we earned it last week because I felt like I prepared last week. I had a chance to.
Yeah.
And I felt a lot better about that podcast than I had on
good.
A lot other ones this season.
Yeah, you were prepared last week.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, mediocre prepared this week. Yeah, not nearly as much, but.
Well, see, now the one-time donations are coming in. They're like, oh, the last show was good, so we'll be on board.
Maybe that's how this needs to go, like a little stick and carrot.
All of it goes to Adam. You know, if you feel like Adam's preparation was good, then just. You
More money.
It'll all go to Adam.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, on to Do Better and Better at Life. We're going to go one each, and I know you want to take Do Better.
Yeah, my Do Better this week is for an article from the San Francisco Gate that showed up on the San Francisco 49ers Bleacher Report stream. Title of the article, "The weather for the 49ers and the Ravens did not sound fun."
Oh, no.
It doesn't sound fun.
Is there going to be a, what are those things that scare you?
Bomb cyclones?
No.
Those are a joke.
That's actually a thing that's going on, though.
Yeah, it's called a storm.
Right.
Yeah.
No, what are with the waves? Tsunamis.
Yeah,
is there going to be a tsunami in Santa Clara?
That would be something that would, you know, actually merit that headline. But no, okay. This is what's going to happen, Brandon. Are you ready? There's 100% chance of rain.
100%?
100%. And it's just unbelievable. This whole thing goes on in, like, basically, let me just read a section of it and just how whiny this sounds. There's 100% chance of rain for the San Francisco 49ers week 13 game against the Baltimore Ravens, which means things could get messy.
Messy?
Quickly. The most recent weather forecast for Baltimore on Sunday shows temperatures in the 40s.
Oh, it's going to be cold, too.
It's going to be all the way down in the 40s. 100% chance of precipitation and wind gusts of 12 miles per hour. In preparation of sloppy conditions, ESPN reported that the Ravens practiced with, quote, wet balls on Friday. and it just goes on. Like, this whole article is the Niners whining about the fact that they're going to have to go play in the freaking rain again. It's called football, fellas. It's called the wintertime. And, like, the golden boys from California, oh, it's going to dip below 50? And I might get a little wet? Oh, my stars, how shall we ever compete?
This is like their version of the Ice Bowl.
Yeah, yeah. So this is usually what Kyle Shanahan has to say. I usually don't like it or want it as much because I feel we're a team that's predicated on speed. And I think rain always slows you down a little bit. I don't mind too much at their quarterback slowing down, though, but I know they're going to run the ball, whether it's a monsoon or not. Meh. Like, it's just like a bunch of crybaby catfish asses. Get out there and play in the rain. So to the San Francisco 49ers being made of sugar who will apparently dissolve in the rain, do better.
It's going to be rough. It's going to be a rough day in the rain.
Oh, 40s is freaking balmy.
Yeah.
What temperature was? You know what the temperature was when I got up this morning, Brandon, to drive to Kalispell?
15?
10. It was 10 degrees.
Yeah.
And the wind was blowing 20 miles an hour. Yeah,
because it's December.
Right. I ran into the dude in the McDonald's bathroom, and he was like, dude, over by Echo Lake where I live this morning, all the 150-year year-old Ponderosa just blowing over sideways because of 60-mile-an-hour winds. And he wasn't even complaining. He was more just impressed. Like, and the Niners are going to do this?
And don't email in. I know it's not December on Friday when we're recording this, but it is going to be December on Sunday when they're playing.
Yes, exactly. I don't care what month it is. Well, it's going away. What are we going to do?
What are they going to do?
Oh.
They're going to have a hard time.
It's going to get swappy.
They practice with wet balls, though.
Well, the Ravens, instead of complaining, they practiced with, quote, wet balls.
Wet balls.
Yeah.
Well, my better at life is 49ers
wet balls?
Themed too.
Oh.
No, it's not wet ball themed.
Okay.
I kind of wish it were.
Yeah.
No. No, it's for Richard Sherman.
Oh, okay.
This one kind of hit close to home for me this last week because last year, my kids, their grade school, the grade school that they went to was on this program where lunch was free to all students. It was kind of cool. You don't have to worry about it. You know, if you pack a lunch, great. If not, they're covered when they get to school. You don't have to worry about
just no
lunch
worries.
Money. They don't have to have lunch money in their account or anything like that. Well, whatever status that the school had last year changed last year to this year when they had to start paying for lunches.
Okay.
You know, for some parents, that could be...
That's a big deal.
It could be a big deal because if your kid is eating school lunch every single day...
Adds up.
It adds up really fast.
Especially if you make the mistake of getting outnumbered and procreate more, you know, than like once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have two kids going and eating food every day.
Yeah, or three.
I know. It's tough. Mm-hmm. And just to get an idea of how much it adds up, just school-wide, on a school-wide basis, Richard Sherman helped to eliminate the debt of the Cabrillo Middle School in Santa Clara. It was nearly $7,500.
Wow.
And Sherman wrote him a check and said, okay, all school lunch debt is canceled at school.
Wow.
Kind of cool.
That is very cool.
He also gave $20,000 to the Tacoma School District.
I'd seen a little bit about that. And then I feel like I read another story, too, that he had something for like a food drive in the Seattle area this last.
Oh, yeah. Ahead of Thanksgiving, he filled up a truck.
Yeah.
And dropped it off at the food bank.
Right. And it just, he's just a good freaking dude, man.
No, you can't even be mad at him.
No, I can't.
You know, it's a big deal, not just for parents not having to worry about coming up with the money if they can't afford it, but it's kind of a big deal for the kids too, because I was reading up on this and there's schools around the country. I don't know if Tacoma and the middle school in Santa Clara are like this, but there's kids that actually get punished because their parents aren't paying their school lunch bill.
Yes.
Like they can't go on school activities like field trips or they can't, or they give them like a bagged lunch that's like the worst lunch imaginable, and like tuna fish sandwich. I mean, maybe not the worst lunch imaginable, but they give them a separate lunch. Mm-hmm. You know, the kids who can't afford to pay
get pizza that day and you get, you know.
Yeah, your sack lunch with an apple and... tuna fish.
An apple and a hard-boiled egg.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Adam Carolla poor man's lunch. That's what he suggests people eat when they're poor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for lunch.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it'll get you by.
It sure will. but it ain't pizza.
But, you know, for kids, kids don't like getting singled out. You know, especially, you know, as a kid growing up poor.
Dude, so embarrassing.
Growing up with...
Yeah, we both did that.
Yeah. Yep. Getting singled out as a poor kid is not fun.
It is not fun. It is not fun to show up, you know, to grade school in all your handmade clothes where everybody else has on their name brand, like, you know, hyper color t-shirts and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. That gets embarrassing.
Everybody has Nikes. You have British Knights.
Oh, yeah. I had the BKs.
Pumas.
LA Gears.
Oh, yeah. LA Gear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, British Knights. Pumas, and
I couldn't even afford Pumas, bro. We went to whatever the flavor of the year was for Payless.
Well, I think the Pumas were like the Christmas present. Like, well, everybody else had Reebok pumps.
I think Pumas are cool now, though.
I think that might be.
Maybe we should look into how Puma has redone their branding, because like they went from being uncool to cool.
We should do that.
Yeah, it would be better for our deal.
We should totally follow the Puma model.
Right.
And 20 years from now, we're going to be big time.
Yeah.
So better life to Richard Sherman for making those kids' lives a little bit better, making the parents' lives a little bit better, and for coming in around the holidays and doing the good deeds all around between this lunch thing and the Thanksgiving food drives as well. Richard Sherman always doing good things in the community.
Yeah. So just to clarify, who is still better at life than Skip Bayless?
Richard Sherman, still to this day.
It just still works.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.